The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by BRB Homes. BRB Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
In the market for investment worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Big News Coming Soon podcast, and this week we are coming to you live from Glenties in County Donegal, and I'm with the main man himself, the King of Glenties, Mr. Micheál Brennan, but you might know him as Donegal Daddy. Micheál, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's great to be in Glenties, County Donegal. We drove through it on the Bumblebee, did we?
Yeah, at the end of the Bumblebee. Yeah, we did. We came through it at the end.
But today I've had time to wander around and I've checked out Afghani kebab and I've checked out Apache pizza and the Highland Hotel.
The number one.
Spot, isn't it?
It's lovely. It's really nice.
It's an absolutely stunning hotel. So we went in there. I had the steak sandwich. What did you have?
I had the chicken burger.
Paid for with our own money, by the way. This isn't absolutely a sponsored post.
But Pat, you can give us something for free if you want.
Pat. Is Pat the owner?
He's the man, yeah.
He wasn't around there this evening?
No, he wasn't about this evening.
See how he avoided us this evening when it came to pay? Come on, Pat. No, we're only joking. He wasn't around. But the food was top class.
And it was lovely.
Do you know what I really liked about it? The second you went in the door, the heat hit you.
Mm. And especially tonight.
That's a lovely thing, and it's a lovely feeling, a lovely warm welcome. In every sense of the word. So, Micheál Brennan. A lot of people don't know your name, I'd say, do they?
No, a lot of people don't. They go, what is your name? Or like, I added it to the profile because so many people were like, I don't know what your name is.
It's funny because at the end of my show in the Clanry Hotel, I was thanking people and I said, there's a man I have to thank who can't be here tonight, but he's helped me an awful lot sell the show and promote the show and he's been a great friend. Any idea who it is? And a load of people in the audience shouted, Micheál. I was like, who the hell is Micheál? I said, no, it's Donegal Daddy. And they all started laughing. But how did it all start? First of all, what age are you?
I am 39.
Wow, another man.
Near 40.
That is keeping well.
I don't know about that.
You don't look a day over 38. And how did the page start? How did the Donegal Daddy page start?
I suppose, like a lot of things, it started in lockdown. I worked in hotel and playing music, so both of them were wiped out overnight on my birthday, actually, 12th of March. And then it was a case of I was at home. My wife, Aoife, is a pharmacist, so she didn't get the option to be at home. She was working all through lockdown. And then I was always tipping away at the social media stuff for the band and just bits and pieces myself. And then I just started doing, I'd done a couple of movie clips, and then people just started requesting movie clips, and then I just started doing them. And I kind of,
what do you mean movie clips?
Like, I done, like, the first one, I was trying to get Gracie to start crawling. And so I was trying using balls to get her to crawl, and just happened to be a red and a blue ball. And then I just thought, oh, this looks like the red and blue pill scene from The Matrix. So then I done that scene with her with the voiceover. And then the next day I done Dirty Dancing, Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner.
Oh, brilliant.
And then I kind of, people started saying, oh, do whatever, and done the Blues Brothers. And I don't think I'd done a movie scene every day for like 7 or 8 weeks.
Wow.
And I was, at the time, Gracie was only nine months. So like, she obviously was just there being, doing her facial expressions and not much else. Like, and I was kind of just getting clips I needed. And
now Gracie has become a huge part of the page.
Yeah, well, she is. She's kind of like, it's like most people will tell you straight out that I don't follow you for you, I follow you for Gracie. Or Kate now seems to be the fan favourite at the minute.
People say that to me about the dog.
That's it.
I only follow you for Cookie.
But it, yeah, it just grew from that. Like, and it was kind of weird. I think part of it was, like, because 2020 was a shit show of a year. Can you say that on here?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Yeah. Fuck. No, but 2020 was a bit funny year for me, because for us as a family, because our dad died in January 2020 before any of this lockdown stuff was happening. And it kind of threw us, because you were just coming, I was just coming back to work. And then next thing we started hearing about this COVID, and then next thing we were closed and everything was gone. So it was weird. And then next thing all this started happening, and kind of by the end of 2020, I didn't have a big following, but I had a bit of people, you had a lot of people following you, messaging you, like, and it was weird because you had that kind of terrible start to this kind of like, oh, this is very cool. And the realization that I don't need to be going out to work 24/7.
And you were probably looking forward to going back to work to get a bit of normality and a bit of routine again.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you're kind of getting, I was literally just back in, I think maybe a week, 2 weeks, 2 weeks probably at the time. Yeah. And then it was kind of all up in a heap again. But so it was strange. Like, it was a weird, weird time, like, in more ways than one. Like,
how many followers do you have now?
I don't know, 43,000 nearly.
I'm not counting, but 43,427.
There you go.
So since the page started, Gracie was 9 months old. And since then, two more babies have come along.
Yeah. So it's been...
You've been busy during the old lockdowns.
None of them actually ended up coming in lockdown. It was kind of like Kate was just at the end of the... And then the Molly, the new one, she's 6 weeks now. And that kind of happened very... We kind of always thought, oh, we might have a third. And then, yeah we found out really quick that it happened, was happening, because it was kind of mad. But
unreal. And when you were working in the hotel, what were you doing?
I was a wedding coordinator in Harvey's Point.
Were you dealing with bridezillas?
Not so much. Like, you hear always about bridezillas, but very rarely you would have anybody that, you know, 9 times out of 10, I always used to say that there's no point in, like, most of the time they're asking you for something that's fairly easy to do.
Right.
Do you know, it's nothing for us. It might seem like a big thing for if you're not working in the, or if you can't make that contact with somebody, but most of the time they're asking for something that's fairly manageable.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I loved working there. That was the hardest part of leaving that job, was like the job previous that I left. I was like, get me out the door. And then this one, I was like, oh, coming down the road after meeting the general manager, I was like, kind of had told him basically I was leaving. And I was like, what am I doing? Why am I, like, I love the job. I love the people there. Like, and I still chat to most of them. Like, some of them I chat to most every day, pretty much. Like,
so why did you leave it?
It just didn't make sense financially, basically, because you were working 9 to 6, it was supposed to be, but it was always 9 to 7, 9 to 7:30, just to get things finished up or to get weddings to that point of the day that you can go home without, do you know, that the brides and groom are happy. So it just kind of meant you were rushing from that job to playing in the band to getting up the next morning, going back into the hotel. So like weekends, you might get one weekend a month off if you're lucky, or one Sunday a month off in the hotel. So you were kind of always running from...
You'd only be off if there was no wedding.
Yeah, well, like one of us would be, we were kind of were balancing it out, like that one of us would be on and one of us would be off. But you were always nearly, you were nearly always in three Sundays in the week, because Sunday was a massive day for show rounds and that as well, like, so
okay,
for couples coming in to meet. So you ended up, and the money was just okay.
So you weren't in the band at this stage?
I was, yeah, in the band. I was.
Oh, so you'd finish up work and then you'd head off and go in the band all night? Yeah,
and then you'd get up, get home at 4 o'clock in the morning, get up again at 8 and go to the hotel.
Oh, no.
And that was kind of, and then it kind of became a thing of when we had Gracie got to this stage, that kind of age then, where, like, mum, I'm not going to say her age or anything, but mum's at that, you know, you couldn't leave a toddler with mum for even that 5 to 7 until you got home, or 5 to 8 until you got home, like, that them hours, you know, you just need, so it just meant I'll stay at home, look after the kids, and then it just made way more sense, and then I'll have time to do other things as well, like, it's kind of, it opened doors then, you see, for other things to happen, because there's a lot of things you had to say no to because you were working the hotel. Like, I was doing a bit of drone work with wedding videographer, like, and stuff like that. It's good crack, the money, it, you know, it's no wild money, but it's good fun, good to get out and do it. And you're not working 60, 70 hours a week. And then,
how long were you a wedding coordinator for?
Nearly 4 years.
Wow, a long time. And before that, what was the job you hated before that?
I suppose it was this, it was working with business startups. It was kind of like a semi government job, where some of the funding came from, and then the rest was, I don't know what it was, way it was funded, but yeah, you were kind of working with people coming off the people. It's called the back to work scheme. I don't know what it's called. And
okay, we don't know where the money came from, but
there was only resting in my account.
There was money there, and then when the money stopped being there, I left.
But it was like you're working with. I actually ended up back last Friday doing kind of MCing and bits of interviewing some of the businesses last Friday, which was great fun. And so you're working with businesses that were people that were on social welfare coming off, they could start a business and they got a kind of a 2-year run at, they could keep their social welfare fully for the first year and then half for the second year, or 75% for the second year.
Brilliant, yeah.
And it kind of just gives you that cushion to start up. It's a great
initiative.
Like, it's brilliant. And like, most of the people you met were brilliant, and there was some startups that were like, there's some startups that were like really worried about starting, and then once they got going and they had that wee bit of a cushion, it was great. Like, and
isn't it interesting? I love to hear stories going full circle, how you were in that job and you weren't really enjoying it, and then years later you're an MC at an event for the same kind of company.
And like, it was like, listen, it was just, I just think I needed to get out of it, because like, I remember, like, I always remember back to one of the ladies in the office, Maura, and she, there was only the two of us in the office, and we were just chatting. You know, you just be sitting chatting, and I was just like, do you ever, do you know when you're coming into work? I was just coming into work, and you know, you just think, I wonder if I drove into the ditch, would I still have to go to work? And she just looked at me and she's like, Jesus Christ, boy, oh, you need to get out of here. That's what she said. And I thought, does everybody not do that? Like, I just thought that was the thing. I just thought, oh yeah, sure, everybody is that going to work. Think, if I crash, will I still have to go to work? And it wasn't until she was like, no, you don't do that. And it was one of those things, I was just like, yeah, maybe I do need to look.
But that's not really normal though, is it? Like, were you suffering from a bit of depression?
When it all came to a head then, when I had a bike accident, and that's when it all kind of everything snowballed that way.
You had a bike accident whilst you were working here?
Whilst I was working there, yeah. It was like...
A bicycle accident?
Yeah.
Right, so tell us about that.
So... I was big into fitness at the time and cycling, and I was out 6-7 days a week training, doing something. And then I done this cycle around Donegal, the 555. It's like 555 kilometres around Donegal. And then I said, I'm going to go really try for that next year. So I started training away for the winter. And then we went to Tenerife on holidays, and we went there a few times, like, and I would always just get a bike and go cycling. And Aoife would sit and read by the pool or whatever, and I would be out for 5 or 6 hours on the bike. And one of the days I was doing a big one, and I think maybe 5 minutes from the hotel, and this lovely Spanish lady just came in off the motorway and didn't see me and just drove straight across me, and I went bang into the side of her car and over her bonnet, took her wing mirror and landed out in front of her.
Were you seriously hurt?
No, not at the time, because I managed not to hit my head. My two ankles, my two knees, my two hips, my two elbows, everything, both sides, was all cut and grazed. But
did you have a helmet on?
I had a helmet on, yeah, and I got up and I just, adrenaline obviously kicked in, and I was just like, what the f*** are you at? Like, and she was sitting in the car screaming, just going, ah!
Because you're a big man.
And a fella came out. It was kind of, she was kind of coming in off one of these roads that sweep, kind of sweep around off the motorway. And there's like a retail centre or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's a big high curb. And then next thing, she was just kind of looking, obviously, where she was heading, what shop she was going to. So she just drove straight across me. And I braked hard, but I couldn't get back out around her. I thought I would, but the bike just went straight into her then. So I just got up and pulled the bike, and the wheel was a wee bit bent, but it was still going round. So I just got back on the bike and cycled off. And I was like, and kind of, I was fine. And I cycled into the shop then that I hired the bike off, and I told them, and he was like, did you get the number? And I was like, no. And I just says, listen, it's grand. I'm fine and everything's fine. But then fast forward, I went out on the bike the next day again, like all cuts and all, but I was just to see that I was okay. And I felt okay, but what it felt like was that I broke my tailbone or something, or my coccyx, you know. I thought that's what happened. But then, like, 3 weeks after, the week before Christmas, it just went bang and my back gave up, and I had this pain down my leg, and two legs were numb. And
you never went to hospital or anything?
No, I just kind of doctored up the grazes. Like, it was just all cuts, like. And then I went to the doctor that day, and then she thought it might be something serious. They sent me for an MRI, and then I got the MRI, and it was like two ruptured discs at the bottom of my back, and they were just basically completely busted out, and they were pushing against the sciatic nerve then. So it was kind of like down into me. Like, and I, for that then led into from the 18th of December, I think it was, until maybe the end of May, I couldn't drive, couldn't sit. I had to stand or lie down. That was it.
Oh my God.
It's one of those things. And then you look fine to everybody else and you're walking about, but I literally couldn't sit down. If I was going in the car, I'd have to get dad or Joe would drive me, and I would have the seat back and pushing my 2 feet in the footwell to keep myself up for it was literally the worst. So if anyone that has back pain, you don't know.
And how did you sort that out?
I was on all kinds of painkillers and tablets, and then I was just waiting, a bloody waiting game. I'd had to try and get, what do you call it, epidurals. So I got four of them in my back and into the disc. And the first one lasted maybe 2 weeks, and then the second one kind of lasted 3 weeks, and then the next one kind of lasted the full month. And then the last one then, it was kind of fine. I was kind of back to fairly normal, like.
Brilliant.
But they were like 400, 500 a time.
Yeah, so during that time then you started to feel a bit down in yourself.
Mm. So like,
because you're not doing your exercise, you're not out. No,
it's kind of nearly like what happened with COVID, I suppose. It was like anybody that knew me was like, oh, he's out in his bike, or he's running, or he's doing something. And he's like fit, kind of fit and healthy. And then that was just gone as well. And I had the bike sitting there then looking at you in the bloody hallway, like, and you're kind of, I ended up selling the bike because it was just pissing me off. And then Aoife had booked this trip of a lifetime for the March. And it was like, we went to Dubai. I flew through Dubai out to Vietnam, and then went kind of down through Vietnam, went to Cambodia. We were supposed to go to the Gili Islands, but I just couldn't. And back then to Dubai again. But before that trip, like, I was trying to get sorted with this injection to get, thinking it was going to be the magic. And a friend of mine, he works in Dublin, he was like, oh, I'll get you into this surgeon, and he'll do the injection for you in the Beacon. And Dad drove me up to Dublin, and I was in bits, like, all the way to Dublin. And your man says, listen, I can do it, but it's not going to just make it go away first thing. I can do it on Monday. This is a Friday, and it's expensive. And I was like, I don't care. I was like, I don't care. And he goes, €1,800. I was like, right, maybe I do care a wee bit.
What were you expecting, 500?
I was thinking 500, like 600, and then, but it turned out, like he said, like the injection's only 400, I think it was, he said, and then, but we have to book a bed space in the Beacon and we have to do all this, and it was all...
Well, you're not like, could I not meet you in the travel lodge?
Can you, I'd do it in the car park, in the back of the van. But he then just looked at all the medication I was on. He's like, oh, look, you can... This, if I up, you can up all this medication. He put me on the max then of each one, and that fucked me up big time. Like the,
in your head,
yeah, it was like I was on this one pre-gabalin, like, and it's like, as the friend that put me in touch with him, and he said to me, get off that as soon as you can. When I came back, because I told him I was in bad form, but he was like, it's like a zombie drug, I could fucking just put you into the. But I was like, oh, and that's when I was at my very, very lowest out away, like, which when you're away, which is. Which was funny, like, because you were kind of, I came home and the cousin says to me, oh, such and a fella was chatting to me. And he says, oh, there's not much wrong with that fella's back out there. And I was like, I literally was planning how I could kill myself out in Cambodia. And some boy's back at home saying, look at that fucker, he's having the time of his life. And you're going like.
You weren't genuinely thinking that.
Though. I had it. I was like, when we got to Cambodia, what happened in Vietnam, I got like food poison or whatever, not food poisoning, but you know, you get the bally belly or whatever they call
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
That. And I started vomiting. So none of the painkillers were staying. So I was like, I was just in the worst pain. And then me and Aoife then I just stopped talking. I just didn't speak. And then we went to Cambodia, and it's a fucking crazy place, like all rickshaws and all that kind of crack. Like, and I was lying in the room, just blinds down. He phoned out to the pool and all that, and I was lying in the room just like a zombied out. Like, I was like, I could easily go out and make it look like an accident, just go for a walk and get, because like, I'm sure people have accidents out here all the time. That was the mentality. And then I was like, this country's mental. It's chaotic. And they don't have English, and I wouldn't do that. And then I was kind of like, I couldn't do that to Aoife, because we're on our own, the two of us just. And then I says, I'll do it in Dubai. That was my thinking. I'll do it in Dubai when we get back there, because her sister was living in Dubai at the time.
And where were those thoughts coming from? Was it just a thought that this was, you were going to live like this for the rest of your life?
I think that was it. It was like, this is just the way life is now. I'm not fit to do anything. I'm going to be, you know, and like, so, and when you think of it now, you kind of go, I know you should be thinking, Jesus, like there's people a lot worse off than you, but
no, but everything's relative.
That's it. You don't think like that when you're in that space. Like, it's, Jesus, it was just 24/7 pain. And you would sleep on the floor, like, rather than sleep in a bed, because it was easier to sleep on a hard floor, like, and things like that. And you're just...
How long had you been with Aoife at this stage?
Oh, we were married in 2016. That was 2018, like, so we were kind of together probably 12, 13 years at that stage, like. But... we went to Dubai then. When we go back to Dubai, I was like, yeah, you could easily make it look like an accident here too, which is the first day in Dubai, just in the room, bedroom, blinds closed, didn't speak. And then my mum and dad happened to be out visiting my cousin that was living out there. And we says, right, we have to pull myself together and go and meet them and out there. And we went and met them, and there was a pub quiz on, and we done that and just left and came back, and I went back into the room, and just, that was it. And then the next morning, Aoife just says, you need to get help when we get home. And that was what flipped it. Like, I was just like, right, yeah, I actually do need to get help. And it was kind of just, we hadn't spoke literally for maybe 3 days.
And there was no conversation in the lead up to that?
No, it was just kind of like, she just was like giving me space or whatever, or she just didn't know what to... Because I would always have had like bouts of anxiety and that, and bouts of kind of like low mood. And then this was just something completely different as well. Like, so then that's what happened when I came home then.
You're really lucky to have that support from Aoife.
I don't think if I didn't have Aoife and I didn't say have mum and dad and that, it would have been way easier. Do you know what I mean? Not way easier, you know what I mean, though. But yeah, it's mad how lucky you can be, like. But... I don't really talk about this much, but yeah, it's crazy. And then when I came home, I had to start going back to that job, and I was like, fuck. And I remember I came out of the job one lunchtime, I just can't do this anymore. And I went out, and I was parked at the petrol station in Donegal Town, I remember it, and I rang the GP who wasn't actually my GP, but I had been speaking to him because he was, he knew back pain and all that inside out, because he was done a lot of sports stuff. And I just rang him, and I says, can I come and see you? And he says, yeah, come on out now, right away. And I drove, it was like 20 minutes on my lunch break, and I went into his office and just broke down. And he just goes, you're not the first one to do that today. He says, so don't, and completely just made me feel at ease. Like, and then I told him the whole story, because I hadn't told really anybody at that stage. Even Aoife didn't know the whole ins and outs of it. And then he just got me sorted with medication and that. And then he told me to go home and tell everybody, basically, mum and dad and Aoife. And that just opened. Jesus, that just made it all lift, kind of start to lift.
Yeah, no, I can really relate to your story, Micheál, because I've been there. I've had similar thoughts, and I've had a similar experience going into the GP and breaking down. And when I had to go to the GP, it was to his house, actually, on a Saturday. So I can empathise with you, and I can relate to what you were going through. And, you know, you're putting on a brave face at work. You're leaving the house in the morning, putting on a brave face with Aoife, and you're going into work and putting on a brave face with them. And then going into your GP and having that sense of security and freedom to say exactly how you feel.
And I think that was probably the third time I'd been in an office with him. Like, because other times I was just talking about back pain and this and that, there's no right, you know. Whereas this time I was just completely, but he was just unbelievable. Like, and then that got me kind of back on the straight and narrow then, kind of. And then I went to therapy and that, and different things, and helped. But
do you mind me asking, what was the next step after that?
I went to there's another, she's an old, a primary school teacher that like would have, she has a lot of life coaching, Sister Helen, and I would have spoke to her different times about anxiety and that, and she would have helped me at times. And I just text her, and she says, she just came straight back with, this is such an a person, they'll meet you in Letterkenny, they don't take on, but she'll take you on. And I went to her then in Letterkenny. I was going to her kind of once a week for every Wednesday evening, kind of, for maybe 10 or 12 weeks, I'd say. And she, it was unreal, her, like, give, she just, the one wee tool that she gave me was just, where do you feel the anxiety, like, and where is it, and you're kind of, like, it'd be in your chest, it's kind of high in your chest or whatever, and she make you sit with it. And, like, we'd be in the office, her office, and
she'd make it, you hold it,
and say, what's it at now, give it a number, and you're giving it 8, like, right, weightless at 0. And there was, I remember one of the first times we sat there for maybe 20 minutes.
With your hand on your chest.
Hand on your chest, waiting until it went, she says, not until it gets to 2 or 1, until it gets to absolute 0. Like, and because I used to find, if it hit me bad, I might just stop and lie on the couch and just be like, I'm not doing anything, I can't do anything. And you wouldn't be sitting with it, you'd just be sitting, being anxious, that kind of way.
Yeah.
And it would just be growing on you then. Whereas that there, that wee tool there just helped me massively, like.
Yeah, before a show, I would get it high up in my chest, you know, with the pure pressure of a show or the anxiety or the adrenaline of a show. But then your kind of daily anxiety that I would go through would be really low in my belly.
Mm.
I have a pain in my belly from the day-to-day kind of anxiety. It's amazing how you can pinpoint it and you know where it is.
Yeah, like I would always be kind of here in the centre of my chest, like, but, and then it gets higher if it's really bad, like it'd be all across you, but it's weird how it takes you over physically, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very physical.
Yeah. Like I used to get it, I used to give fitness classes like spinning and circuits, and I would have the class done out to the minute, but I would still be sitting there before a class, down in the house, going, oh jeez, I'm useless, I can't do this class, why are they coming into me, I'm just a fraud, like what are they? And then I would stand the bottom of the stairs here, and I'd be like, oh, you have to go in here, like, and it'd be like a minute to the start of the class, but I would just have to go. And then the minute you get in, you'd do the class, and everyone would be like, geez, that was great, and you go, that was grand, wasn't it? And but I could do that 6 times a week, like, where I would have
torture myself.
Yeah, it had to be like every class and every exercise you're putting in had to be, and you're going, doesn't have to be. Do you know what I mean?
You put too much pressure on yourself.
Like, and like I would have myself so stressed out about it, And like people come up, and sure, even if it was a shite class, they were still going to have a sweat worked up, and it would still be, they would get something out of it. But I would have myself.
Did you ever get to the bottom of why you put so much pressure on yourself?
No, because even I went to another therapist as well, and he was talking to me about what do you do like for work or whatever, and I was like, well, I work as a wedding coordinator, like, and then I do this wedding band as well. And he's like, right, and who does the bookings for the wedding band, and who does the talking to the brides and that? And I was like, oh, that's me, I do all that end of it, like. And he's like, right, and you have all this anxiety, and you have you stress yourself out with all these details, and yet you've picked two jobs that are like, there's so much that has to go right, and it's so, that you have such a window like of things have to be done. And he just was like, why are you doing this to yourself, literally, instead of just getting yourself a job that's less stress or whatever.
And when you were leaving that job then, did you have responsibilities like a mortgage and loans? And
yeah,
so like you had all that playing in your mind, how am I going to pay that, or
I actually kind of got the other job basically,
right,
before I left. I was kind of I think it was maybe $6,500 a year cut, plus other expenses like I would have got, but and no pension and all, but I didn't care like that.
Yeah, it's not always about that.
It's not and even when I left that job to do stay at home, like I always think back. I actually met this teacher there about 6 months ago. He used to always say to us, one of our Tektron teachers, he always goes, job satisfaction, boys. He'd always say, it's not about how much money you can make. Like, you know, we'd be all in the leaving cert going, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make this money. And he was like, it's not all about money, like, it's job satisfaction. He used to always say that. And it's not until you're old enough to realize that you're kind of, it is that. There's absolutely no point in making $100,000 a year if you're miserable in the job or you have no life outside of the job.
I was speaking to a business owner recently who has a number of staff, and I was saying to him, do you find it hard to keep the staff, or like, what's staff retention like? And he said that, no, he said he doesn't have any problem keeping the staff, but he said that he spends all his time making sure they're happy. And the happier they are, the less hassle he gets for pay rises and bonuses and this, that and the other. Now, he said if one lad wants a Tuesday off and he wants to come in and work the Sunday instead, he lets him.
That's it.
Do you know, and he gives him that little bit of flexibility. And he said that he focuses all his time. Now, they're well paid, like, don't get me wrong, but he said he focuses all his time on making sure they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Thanks.
Sorry, that was very heavy there.
It wasn't, not at all, because an awful lot of people are going through the same thing, and an awful lot of people can relate to it. And I really admire your honesty and the way you were able to open up about it, because that's going to help so many people. And I think people are very quick to look at social media and say, look at your man there, and isn't he doing great, and everything's mighty, but they don't see they don't think about the things that they don't see on social media.
That's it. Like, and people aren't going to automatically come on if they're having a shit day and go, oh, I'm having a shit day.
Yeah.
It's great, you know. And like, you do have down days as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Everyone has them.
And then next thing, I get an old DM from somebody going, oh, you donkey, like, you
know. I know, yeah. Lately, they're getting more and more. And also, I just want to commend Aoife before we move on, just to say that, you know, she's a mighty bit of stuff and fantastic support. And great that she recognised that and stuck around and was able to support you through that.
That's it, like, because, like, she's great at just going, that doesn't matter.
She doesn't let things bog her down.
No, and she can see things she can control and not control, or if something's annoying her, she'll fix it, you know.
Yeah.
So when you don't have that anxiety, it's hard to recognize it or know what to, and like, that's even that now, like, she knows, even if it's going bad, things are bad for me a day, she'll know either to give me space or tell me get out and do something, or you know, get out and have a walk, or, because it is hard, I think it was hard earlier on. She just thought, oh, I must, that she done something on me, or what am I doing wrong, or what's wrong with him, like, you know, kind of at the start it was kind of, we were knocking heads at times, like, where you'd be just going, ah, leave me alone, like, kind of thing.
Yeah. But because we've become really good friends, and we talk every couple of days, and we were on the Bumblebee together, and we were on the island together, and we've become really close. And you kind of strike me as a man early on when we were getting to know each other. I would have thought of you as a fine looking, big, tall, strapping man that has his shit together. He's in a band. He's confident. He has, you know, And to hear that story then is an eye opener.
Mm.
Because you kind of have an opinion in your head of somebody.
You know, a lot of people think, you know, like that thing I done last week where I was shitting it, going to talk to people, like having to do interview bits, and they go, "You're in the band." And I go, "I sit at the back on the drums, like nobody."
Yeah.
I don't see the band as, I don't get nervous playing in the band anymore at all. Like, you know, it's kind of.
You have the easiest job there in the band.
You just go and you sit and you play and you shout the odd song or whatever. Like, and it's, but you're not.
Nobody ever says the drummer was shit.
But nobody ever, well, I think they probably do when they see us.
No,
but it's like, you don't have to, you're not out going, hey,
yeah,
you know.
You're not the front man.
No, and it's a lot easier, definitely. And it's a lot easier even as a front man of a band where you have a band. Like, I'd say it's a lot harder if you are the...
That's interesting, because when I was doing the Galway races during the summer, and myself and Sinead Cassidy, we had loads of meetings in the lead up to the Galway races, and we had met up and done different videos in Shop Street, and I had to walk down Shop Street with a horse, and I was doing all these little things to give myself confidence to do, number one, to do the Galway races, to host the audience cam for the 7 days, and the other thing was to host my own shows. So I was pushing myself all the time to the limit. And when it came to the actual Galway races on the Monday morning, and I had been to the racetrack 20 times at this stage, we had it, not that we had it rehearsed, but we knew what everyone had to do. And on the Monday morning, I went into the office and Sinead Cassidy started laughing. And she just started laughing, and then she looked at me for a second and she goes, "Wow, I have never seen you like this." And like, I kind of thought I was putting on a brave face, and I was like, "Oh yeah, here we are now." And I had the suit on and I was there, and she was like, "Jesus, Alan, all right." I was shitting it.
I would say, like, it's,
and everyone says to you, "Sure, you're on social media. You're talking to people every day of the week."
And I would have thought too, with the radio background too, you're probably.
But you're talking to yourself.
Yeah.
You're talking to yourself. You're not surrounded by 1,000 people looking at you at this, and then it's live, and then.
Yeah. I think a lot of people think when you're doing the videos too, like, they think, "Oh, sure, you put that video up, sure, grand," and you're going, "I done that video in my house, in my kitchen."
Yeah.
Like, no one, nobody looking at it. Like,
yeah.
Only the dog, and you're kind of going. And it's, yeah, it's a different kettle of fish. Like, it's, I don't know. I think even, I done bits before, like even this here now, I'll probably come out going, I'll come back into my body when I get outside the door, and I'll be like, "What the hell did I say in there?" Do you know, it's kind of like, I find that even on, I done a thing on, I went on Highland Radio as a guest or whatever one day, and it was like, somebody texts me after going, "Oh, that was great." And I was going, "I have no idea what I said."
Yeah.
B&B Homes make your dream home a reality. We do it all from start to finish. Your one-stop shop to becoming a homeowner. Log on to brbhomes.ie.
I can completely relate with that, because I have the exact same thing. I come off stage in Castlebar, and people are coming up to you saying that was great. I had no recollection. I couldn't even tell you two words I said on the stage. But do you know what I mean?
That night in Castlebar was unbelievable. I just thought, you just came out and it was just friggin', it was like a show you would see anywhere. Like, it could be anywhere.
Yeah. And well, I was winging it. Like, it was absolutely... It was structured and planned and also thrown together at the same time.
But it was, I just thought it was top class. Like, it was really, Jesus, it was.
Do you know what settled me that evening? So it was 10 minutes before, the show was starting at 8 o'clock and it was 10 to 8. And I had my own little room up the back of the stage. And it wasn't that anyone handed it to me or said, "This is your room, Alan." I found it. I said, "This is my, I'm coming in here. Everyone leave me alone." I needed 10 minutes to myself. And then Stuart Miles was wandering around looking for a place to change. And he wandered into my room and he goes, "Can I change in here?" And I said, "Yeah, sound." And at the time I was like, could you not have fucking picked anywhere else to change? Just leave me alone. But of all the people in my life, I would take a bullet for Stuart Miles. Yeah. He's an absolute gentleman and he's helped me so much over the years. So he came in anyway and he was getting changed and I was there pacing over and back and my heart was pounding. And I was never as nervous, never as anxious, never as every single emotion you could have. You've 2,000 people out there waiting for you. You've never done anything like this before. You don't know how it's going to go. You don't know what am I going to say? I know what I want to say. Am I going to be able to say it? Are they going to take it up the way I want it to be taken up? And you have all these different things going through your head. And he was there throwing on his shirt, and he performs for a living. He's done these gigs. He's played in front of huge audiences. He's been on TV. He's done it all. And I said to him, I don't know how I can go out here, Stuart. I just don't know how I can do it. And I was like a nervous wreck. And it's at this stage where you've no choice.
Yeah, it's happening.
It's happening. You have to go and do it. And I said to him, I honestly do not know how I'm going to walk out on that stage. And he turned to me and he goes, and you know, you kind of expect somebody to sit you down and say, look, Alan, you've got this far and they're all here for you and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, yeah, well, at least you don't have to open the fucking show. He had to open the show.
Yeah.
And he had to sing the very first song.
And plus, and that, they're all coming to see Alan Clark. And Stuart Moyes is walking.
And no one knew he was going to be coming on.
Yeah.
He was a surprise. And just him saying that made me feel 10 times better. Yeah. And I thought, wow, it's amazing.
I think with that, with your show, it was like, I didn't say it till the night, but it was kind of reminded me of when I was going to do my wedding speech. I was absolutely bricking it before it. And a friend of mine just came up and goes, everybody in this room is wanting you to do well. There's nobody in here waiting for you to go, and that's exactly what that room was like. That 2,000 people, you could have come out and with no show. And you know, everybody was in that room was like, Jesus, this hope this goes great for him. Like, yeah. And it was, you know,
the energy was unbelievable.
It was the show was class though. Like what you put on, and nobody knew what they were calling. You know, like I'd never been to a live podcast, so I didn't know what to.
Sure, I'd only been to one.
And you're kind of going, so it was something completely, you know, new for, I'd say, 90% of the people. Like, and it was...
I remember walking out and I looked up the very back right corner. There was like an emergency light. So it was dark. You can see the first two or three rows and then that's it. You can't see anything. And then up at the very back right hand corner, there was like this little emergency light and it was shining on one person. And I just remember saying to myself, that person is miles away.
That was probably me. I went up to take a picture. I was like,
this place is fucking huge.
It was.
I said, that person is, and I had been in the theatre loads of times. But when you see this tiny, 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 tiny little head, I was just thinking, wow. And then the show went well. Yeah, we ran behind. We ran behind by an hour. But I think it was supposed to finish at 11 and we had an hour left at 11. And I went out at 11 and I said, we're running behind. Does anyone mind? And the whole place went, no.
But I don't think it felt...
That's the one thing everyone said. No one
never didn't feel like it was an hour longer or anything. Like it didn't. Yeah. I don't.
So then I challenged myself to sing a song, and I've always, all my life, I've wanted to sing a song.
Mm.
And I spoke to Stuart about it, and there was a couple of songs I wanted to sing that just didn't suit me and probably a bit too hard. And he goes to me, "Why don't you swing Sweet Caroline? Like, sure, most of the crowd will sing it. It's an easy song. It's a karaoke song. It doesn't really matter if you mess it up or whatever." So I said, yeah, grand, maybe. So I started practicing this Sweet Caroline or whatever. And then I remember it was the last song of the night and you're up to high dough. You have no idea how the last 5 minutes had gone because you're constantly focusing on the next few minutes.
Yeah.
And you just think, well, I hope that went well. I hope that went well. And then me and Donal did a bit of a dance off and I made a bit of an idiot out of myself because I was out in the work pants, you know, and you just don't know how people are going to, are people going to be watching this going, look at this daft bastard now, but.
No, I thought that was class. And then. Donal was hilarious too.
Donal, it was so funny. Donal goes, I look like a penguin. And then at the very end, this is the only thing I remember of the whole night. I'm there on stage trying to sing Sweet Caroline, everyone behind me, the whole place standing up, everyone singing, everyone cheering, hands up. And I look up on my left and there's three stories in the TF Royal Theatre. And I look up here on my left on the top floor and there was a woman lit up again by some sort of light. I don't know how I could see her, but she was lit up and she had her arms folded and she was staring down at me.
Yeah.
And that's the only person I could see in the whole theatre.
It's like the negative comment. You just read the one.
Like, I think it holds 2,010 people and I could only see the one woman and she had the arms folded like this. And she did not move or blink or anything like that. And the same thing happened in Cork. We had a brilliant night in Cork. And it was during a red weather warning. And you know, a load of people were trapped in their houses during this really bad storm. And we were going down to Cork thinking, will we cancel it or will we postpone it or what will we do? So we were at the mercy of the theatre, and the theatre said, look, guys, there's no hazard in Cork City. They had a health and safety guy in. He said the level of the water is fine. The theatre is open and the theatre has to go ahead.
Mm.
So we had to go ahead, even though 20 or 30 people couldn't make it to the show. And during that night as well, we had a really good night. But there was one man in the audience and he did not look up once. And all I could see all night long was his forehead, because he was on his phone.
Born.
And he was three or four rows back on the left. And he actually, I think we found a photo, and I was showing it to somebody else recently, and you could just see, all you could see all night long was his forehead lit up. And you're here all night long and you're worried about the running order, and you're talking to the guests and you're thinking about what question will I ask next, and did the audience like that part, and did they react to this part? And all I could see was his forehead for 2 hours.
See, it's funny, isn't it, how you just focus on that one wee, and everyone rather thinks, than everything else around him.
Yeah, everyone thinks you're up there and you're killing it, or you're doing whatever, but there's something niggling away at you the whole time.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? We do that in the band as well. There's nights you'll see some one person just looking at you and they're not getting up, and you're just like, if by the end of this night I don't have you up dancing, that's do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And the floor, like that, the floor could be full and you're just concentrating on that one person that's not.
99% of them having a great night.
And then they'll probably come up to you in the jacks after going, geez, you're a great band.
Yeah.
And you're just going, you're just a sour looking person.
So now you're, I hate to say it, and I think you get a little bit pissed off when people say you're a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, well, I don't get pissed off about
this. Because you do work, you do work.
Aye, but I don't mind, I am a stay-at-home dad as well, like that is what I do during the week. Like,
there's not too many of them.
I think there's more of them now than there was, definitely. I get a lot of messages now, thankfully, from people asking different things, but it's funny, like, I was saying this to somebody last week about, I hate when people congratulate you or say, like, women come up and say, oh, well done you for staying at home, and you're going, do you say that to, I called people out now, I go, would you say it if I was a woman staying at home, like if I was a stay-at-home mother? They probably wouldn't, they'd probably be going, oh, fucking one staying at home, do you know?
And why do you think they say that?
I don't know, I think like that it's because it's not seen to be the done thing, but they wouldn't say it to a woman, they wouldn't congratulate or say it to a woman, fair play to you for staying at home with the kids, like.
Right.
It wouldn't happen.
But do you think that there's no badness in it though, is there? Or is it just that?
No, there's they're saying it to me like, well done, great stuff. But I just think it's funny that they would say it to a man about staying at home, whereas they wouldn't say it to a woman like, well done, that we can nearly be sure. Yeah. Do you know?
Would you not get a nanny and go and get a job?
Or something like that. Or, you know, they just wouldn't even mention it. They would kind of be like, poor her, like sitting at home kind of thing. But
okay,
it's funny, like it's, even at the start too, I remember a woman saying to me, oh, you're babysitting. And I was like, no, they're my kids. I'm not babysitting. They're mine.
Yeah.
Do you know, just parenting. And it was a girl. It was only, like, she wasn't that much older than me. And I thought, you know, older ladies would have said it to you loads. Like, oh, you're babysitting the kids today. Is mommy at work? And you're like, no. But it's funny. It is changing, definitely. Like, it's becoming more normal, I suppose. But
I don't think it gets the credit it deserves. It's a tough job, man or woman. It's a tough job.
Like, even both at home, like, it's Jesus. Like, even when we had just had Gracie, like, and just the one, and I still think of my mum and dad going, how the hell did they, like, man, because they always ran businesses, like, as well. And you're going, how did they do it? Like, and have,
how many siblings do you have?
Just one brother, like, but right. They're kind of like the, there was only 3 years between us, like, so it would have been kind of the same kind of growing ages, like, and you're just like, there's always something, like, but then again, our house was a kind of a funny kind of a house. It was always open door, like, so.
And I know my next question is, like, what's it like being a stay-at-home dad with three girls? And it's a tricky one to answer, because you don't know what it's like to be a stay-at-home dad with boys, but I mean,
but I see, it was only me and the brother, so it's kind of, it was boys all, but just that's all I knew, like.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people say, oh, you're a real girl dad, like, and you're like, but I have to be a girl dad because that's what I am. But it's, like, listen, I was just thinking about this last day. I remember in the kind of mid-20s, I was like, I don't know, what do you even want to have kids? And do you want, you know, you kind of never seen it as a kind of a, or not even, I never seen it, but I was just like, you went through a phase of, you know, maybe I don't want kids and maybe just, you know. Mm. And then when we had Gracie, I just was like, oh shit, what the hell's, what am I in? What are we doing? What's, like, it was absolute fear, basically. And then the minute it all just happened, and you're just, I don't know, was it some kind of an instinct or what?
Fight or flight mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was just like, because when we had Gracie, Aoife ended up getting bloody sepsis or whatever about 4 days after she got home, and she ended up back in. So then I was left with the baby for like 5 days of my own kind of thing when she was in. Mum was like, oh, I'll come down and help you. And Aoife's mum was like, I'll come and help you. And I was like, no, I don't want help. I have to do this. And then that kind of was the start of, I suppose, not the stay-at-home thing, but it was just like...
It sounds terrifying to me.
I was just like, no, I have to... Like, this is what I'm doing now, and I have to do it. Like, and it was kind of a good start that way. Like, it was kind of a baptism of fire of everything. Like, but...
Tell me, are the girls... Are daddy's girls or mammy's girls?
No, they're definitely mammy's girls. They
are they?
Oh.
Because you would assume that they couldn't be pulled off you because they're with you all day long.
I always say that to Aoife. I mean, what age were you when you used to sit up on your dad's? Because like Aoife, she's daddy's girl. Like she is. I'd be like, what age were you when you started sitting up? And she's like, oh, just always. And then I'm like, come on.
And what you're saying, Gracie won't sit in your lap?
No, she will. Like, times now, she'll sit and she loves to kind of sit up and we'll watch a movie or whatever. But yeah, she'd be like, oh, I like mommy better. And it's always the... And you're just going like... But it's just normal. Like, it's...
Because I saw you... you did a video, was it in McElhenney's, and you were getting Gracie to try on clothes.
Oh, yeah.
And she said something like, I want mommy or...
Oh, she didn't care. I was like... Because we picked two outfits, me and Aoife. And it was like a challenge to see... It was like kind of passion fashion thing, like what outfit she would pick. And she picked my one, but it was like, it couldn't be my one she picked. She was just like, no, it's mommy's. I want mommy's. And I was like, right.
I'm picking this outfit, but it's mommy's outfit.
Because Aoife was like, oh, that's daddy. And I was like, don't, it's daddy's, it's mommy's.
Don't anger the beast.
Yeah, just let it. But definitely mommy's girls. But at the same time then, they'll come round at times to be when they want something or they want a biscuit at 10 o'clock at night or something.
And it's tricky for people to listen to this now who don't know Gracie or Kate or Molly and they don't know what they look like and they're not following them. But Kate just strikes me as a little baby girl who is never in bad form.
Oh, that's...
Like, she's a beautiful smile.
She's hilarious. Like, she's just... I never knew the stereotypical second child was a thing. But it seems that everybody, like when they see if she's doing something up on something or into something, everyone goes, oh, that's the second child. And I'd be like, I'm a second child. And I was like, oh, well, maybe that makes sense too, because my brother would be a lot quieter. But but then she can lose her life. But as I always say,
what do you mean?
Just start roaring for no reason.
Okay.
Like she can, like.
Right, right.
But as I always say, you don't, like, I'm not going to start whipping out the phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Here.
Exactly.
Let's get this tantrum on record.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to calm it down.
I hope I don't cross the line now with this next question, and you can tell me to feck off if you want. But did you ever hope for a boy, or did you ever say, I love a boy? Or
no, I had no. Aoife's dad is always like, oh, did you want a boy? And I was like, no, I actually don't care. He said to me last time when we found out we were having Molly, like, I was like, oh, jeez, do you want? And I was like, no. He says, oh, you know, for the football. I says, I'm sure she could be playing the World Cup. For all we know.
Yeah.
And I says, if I had a boy, more than likely he'd turn out as good as football as me and be freaking do nothing. No, I've no, like, I honestly didn't care. Once everything's well, especially after we had Gracie, there was kind of, it was an emergency section and that, and there was a lot of
drama.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Just get the baby out and get everybody
okay,
safe. You don't.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm just trying to get inside your head. I don't, like, I'm 38 now with no kids and no partner and no sign of either. So it's interesting just to get inside.
It can all happen very fast, though.
Yeah, but, that's the only thing I'm just trying to understand. You know what kind of thoughts go through your head, and I'm not.
No, it's a
hope I didn't offend you.
Not at all. No, it's it. it's always a question, I suppose, that, but you don't, I don't think.
It's this kind of thing, though, in Irish society, isn't it? It's like the perfect family.
Like, I get it all loads of times. Like, another girl, like, oh, Jesus, how's the football going to keep going if they keep having girls? Because a lot of girls happen to be born around the same times as last, when we had Kate and when we had Molly, a lot of girls coming into the town, like, and they're like,
there's women footballers in Donegal that would show up, some of the men.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're kind of going like, oh, but it's funny, like, it's just,
look at Cora Staunton down in Mayo.
I think it's just old, it's that old school thinking too, like, it's just, people just think.
Yeah, Donal Byrne was saying that to me as well about the houses. You know, people would come in and they'd be looking at this house, and it's a dream house, and it's a factory built house, and oh my God, and it's the future, and it's going to be warm, and it's going to go up quick, and it's going to be whatever price we say it's going to be. And then the granddad will come in and he'll go, well, if it's not blocks, we're not going with it. Like, you know, and then you're trying to explain to him, well, houses in America aren't built with blocks, and, you know, and this is the future. And no, blocks are nothing.
There's a few friends of mine that were building, and I was like, you should look at that, Donal Burns. Like, send the plans to him, get it checked, you know, get a price. And they're like, but what can I guarantee? As you get 25-year guarantee with it. And what guarantee do you get with blocks? Like, you see what's happening? Like,
What's
happening, don't you? But I that's what, even I said this to Donal, I was like, there's still a very big grab with block in Donegal. Even after all the mica crap, like,
it's incredible. When you think about, like, the steel alone is going to last. And I'm not on trying to sell the houses for Donal. I know he does sponsor them, but I'm just getting back into that whole, the old Irish mentality. And you're saying that this steel, and Donal uses a higher grade of steel, it's going to last for thousands of years.
It's like, funny, like, it's just
what can compete with that? What, like, can compete with that?
You get no guarantee with
timber and concrete.
Anything built, like, it's
It's incredible at the old school mentality. So I'd say you do get a little bit of that.
Yeah, it's strange, but I suppose we're built different in Donegal.
How is the band going?
Good, busy, very busy.
You're doing weddings the whole time?
Weddings, pretty much all weddings now. We've done a few venues, but very little. We don't.
Where did the name Red Alert come from?
Funny you should say that, about, because you're talking about the red warning down in Cork. We were here one day and we were changed. We were called Turbulent Eddie, and that was kind of, we were doing original music under that as well. And then we're like, oh, we need to change the name for the cover band, and we couldn't think of a name. And then we were going down to play in Cork in Reardon's, and there was a red storm warning across the whole country, and especially in Cork.
Yeah.
And we were getting into a van to travel 6 hours to Cork to play a bloody gig to come home that night. And then we just says, right, Red Alert, because it's a red storm, and that was where it came from.
Brilliant.
And and then every time there's been a red alert storm warning, we've used that as a marketing tool.
Yeah. And do you enjoy that?
I love it. Yeah.
Is that your release?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's when you get in there, because you're kind of, you can't concentrate on anything else. And if you do concentrate on something else, or if something else going on in your head, you're not going to be able to play that way. You're going to make silly mistakes on the drums or whatever. So it's great for that thing of just, you have to be focused. You have to be there, present in it, rather than thinking about.
I know an awful lot of people in bands, and, you know, they look great from outside looking in, but they can be challenging.
Oh.
Are ye, do you gel well together?
Oh yeah, we like,
because a lot of musicians are individuals playing in a band, whereas you should be a group of people playing in a band.
I think we started in 2000, three of us, so 24 years ago.
Is it a three piece band?
Well, it's four piece now, like, but it was three. The three of us started in kind of 2000 until maybe we'd done about 8 or 10 years, I'd say, and then we went to four piece. And then the three of us now were cousins as well. And then the other lads, pretty much part of the family as well. That kind of way.
So you know, it sounds good. Like, it sounds like three of us are cousins, so we can all get along. But also it could easily go the other way, because you're cousins.
But it does go the other way. Like, it can do. Like, and you can be like, you know, we can have, that's the good thing about it, is we can have these fucking F each other out of it. And then
it's forgotten about.
It's forgotten. It's like, it's grand.
Oh, well, that's good.
Do you know, it's, there's never, and I think that what you're saying about, oh, such an, you know, you have individuals that
just rocking.
You do see that in bands, like where there's one person that wants to be the whole band, yeah. wants to be the person, like, whereas none of us are like
craving the limelight.
No, we don't. We're all happy to do our bit.
It's just a job. Get in and get it done.
Not even that it's just a job, but it's just like you go in and if you have an ego there going, oh, I'm the man, it just puts a bad taste on stage and you're not having the crack. Whereas we go in and have the crack and everyone else feeds off that.
Good.
And they see that you're having the crack.
Yeah.
And it just, it's what it's all, I think there are too many, because I've done filling in for other bands where there's like five different people on the stage every night that you go out. You know, there's never the same band. And there's lads like that to come in, get the paycheck, out the door. And then you're just like, you might get nights where you have two or three lads that you'll know and you go, oh, bit of crack.
Hmm.
And they'll have you may as well have the crack as get paid and get paid for it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas some of them just, give me the money, get out.
Yeah, it's all about the money. Are you enjoying social media? I mean, having 40-something thousand followers is huge.
Well, it's big enough, I suppose. I still think of it as only me, mammy, and me, few friends looking at it. Like,
yeah,
it's good. I love it. Like, I love putting together the videos, putting together bits and pieces like that. You know, just trying to do different wee things that I think are funny, and I just hope that other people find them funny, like, in a way. And then,
my favourite video of yours is you talking to Daniel O'Donnell.
That one there was like a one take wonder.
How did that come about? Like, how did you, do you know Daniel?
I do know. I know him now.
But you didn't know him to walk up to and say, how are you, Daniel? I'm Micheál.
I didn't really know him. At that stage, I did actually know him. That stage, I kind of did know him.
Did he know you?
Daniel, if he meets you once, he knows you.
Right.
It's amazing. He's unbelievable. And he came into her.
I've heard a story. Sorry to cut across you. I've heard a story that he'll go into a supermarket in his hometown, and he could be in there 3 hours.
Oh, like
just talking to people, and like doesn't really want to leave. Maybe he does want to leave, but he has so much time for everyone.
He's like literally the most generous person with his time of anybody. He came in, right, my first proper, like, I would have met him at times, obviously, during the years, over the years, like, when I was younger, but my first time properly kind of having a conversation was at a wedding in Harvey's Point, and he came in, and I got a phone call from Noel Cunningham, was the general manager at the time, and he rang, and he says, go out the back door, Daniel's coming, just let him in the back door, he's going in to talk to that bride. And I was like, Daniel who? Like,
yeah.
I thought it was, like, there's somebody in working, Daniel O'Donnell. I was like, oh, right. So I went out the back, and sure enough, Daniel swung in the car, and how's it going? What's the crack? And he landed in, and he's like, I'll just go in. I said, do you want a mic or anything to sing? Oh, no, I'll just go in to say hello. And he went in to this wedding. There was 250, 260 people over to the bride to chat to her, and the place went mental. It was unreal. And the bride had, she had been going to Daniel concerts all her life. Her mum and her two aunties used to take her to Daniel when she was growing up. And then when she got to her kind of teenage years, she was still going to them, but she would tell her dad, if any of the girls ring, tell them tell them away somewhere else. Don't tell them away to Daniel. Dude, she would say this here. But then when she got to kind of 16, 17, she was like, oh, I'm going to Daniel with me, mum and aunties.
Yeah.
And she kind of, and he came in and started speaking to her. Next thing then, I get a mic. Got the mic, sang My Donegal, sang Destination Donegal, something else, and the place went bananas. And he stayed, he was going on his way to play a gig in the Allingham, and he stayed and took selfies and chatted. And
because I met him at the top of Crowpatrick, I was doing the social media for the Climb with Charlie. And he was the MC, and other celebrities, like, there was, I'm not going to name them now, but there was loads of celebrities, and they're all busy people, but they were all flying in and flying out. And one particular celebrity literally flew in a helicopter and flew out again. Now climbed to Crowpatrick, but flew in and out to the bottom of it. But Daniel was there the whole time, and no panic on him, no. And do you know what? He that's the first time where I went, this man is an absolute genius on the microphone. Because we were at the top of Crowpatrick, I don't know how many people were there, hundreds of people there. You're with Charlie Bird, who has a really serious condition. he had everyone in fits of laughter. Mm. 2 minutes later, he had everyone crying. And 2 minutes later, he had everyone in fits of laughter again.
Oh.
And there was somebody there at the time. I can't remember who it was. Who was it now? But we were at the side of the church at the top of Crowpatrick. If anyone doesn't know, there's a little church at the top of Crowpatrick. And he was slagging someone about coming up, putting in a bathroom. And he said, so obviously some bathroom fitter, or it was probably someone high profile anyway. And I can't think who it was now. But I remember him picking up the mic, slagging this man about coming up to fit a job.
Yeah.
Do you know, at the top of Crowpatrick, and he had everyone laughing. But, and then even when we got to the bottom, just time for everyone and just never made it about him.
No, that's
you
it.
You know, whereas other celebrities would kind of come in and make it about them.
And like he, even there, I went to the Clonmany shows there and he was opening it. And I was giving them a hand. Noel was doing a bit of work with them and I was giving them a hand doing video for them just on that day. And I thought, oh, he's coming to open it. It'll be 10 minutes and he'd be off the stage. He came, he opened it. He'd done 50 minutes of a show, like of, he'd do a song. Yeah. He would, the band were there, but they didn't know what he was calling. He was going, give me, do something. We'll do this one and see, do this one. And he would just take it away. And he'd done these jokes, like full on proper stand-up comedy. Like it was great. Then he came off the stage and they said, he said, oh, I'll meet anyone that wants to meet, you know, say hello, come on, I'll be here.
Yeah.
And he stood and we went and I came back and it was an hour and 20 minutes, I think. And he was still finishing off photos, like.
I'd say so.
And he was there to open it, like, as a kind of a.
Yeah.
As a
just
gesture.
A kind of, yeah, a it celebrity. Wasn't like a, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a paid gig or nothing. It was like, he's just coming to. Because that time then, when I'd done that video with him, it was in. They were doing a music video for. These guys React Productions, they do a lot of just kind of promotional videos and different work, but they'd make like short movies, short films and that as well. But they wanted to make a kind of a music video, but say thriller-esque, where it had a bit of, you know, you could do that longer form for a music video. So they were doing it with Daniel and it was about a night with the Daniels and all these wax Daniels in the museum come to life and all this. And Daniel comes, of course, then to save the day.
Right.
So they were looking for extras, so I was like, yeah. And like the amount of people that sent it to me was like, I got sent it loads. And this was before I'd ever done that video with them. Like, but
yeah.
So I went down to do the extra and we were down. The first thing, we were all sitting, right? The boys were queue up here, or gather up here, like as a crowd, as if somebody's speaking for the opening of this. And Daniel then landed with Magella and he's kind of looking at who was there and he's like, oh yes, Miel. And you're just going, Jesus Christ.
He remembers, yeah.
And he's just like, I don't know. And then he comes over and he's like, oh, he's getting all the videos are going well for you. And you're going like, what?
Wow.
What is life? Like, it's mental. Yeah. And then I just said to him then that evening, I were chatting about his cars then, because like I'd be big into cars like you. And then we were chatting about, he's a Tesla and we were chatting about that. And he's like, oh, sure. We'll get a spin on it later on. And then I said, we might do a video. And aye. And then the next night, that was the nice system. I'm thinking of doing this here. Right, what am I doing again? And I was like, oh, you just say, I wonder is he about or whatever.
Yeah.
And then one take and he done that and it went.
So for people who haven't seen it, you're in a bar and Daniel O'Donnell's at the bar and you come up over his shoulder and you say, oh yeah, Daniel O'Donnell's
supposed to be about tonight.
And then he goes, is he?
Aye. I wouldn't mind getting a picture with him.
Yeah.
And then, like, he'd done all that off the cuff. Like, and then I didn't even know what to say because I was like, ah, this is better than what I had in my head.
And then you say, aye, same as that, same as that. And that stuck with me the whole time. And I do say that on a regular basis. Same as that. I always go, same as that, same as that.
But he,
You just walk off.
Because, like, he started TikTok then after that, on the back of that, because it kind of took off. And then he went on TikTok. And then, because the day he joined TikTok, he was on with Tommy and Myrne on Ireland AM.
Right.
And they played that video.
Did they?
And everyone was like saying it to me going, I was like, Jesus, it's.
We'll have to find the audio and we'll stick it in funny. Here. So this is the audio of Donegal Daddy and Daniel O'Donnell.
Somebody's out there saying Daniel O'Donnell's coming in the night. Joke, can I say? You tell me to see him, will you?
Oh, well, sure.
I wouldn't mind a picture of him.
Same as that.
Right. Let me know.
All right.
It's amazing. I just keep saying, same as that, same as that.
Because I didn't know what to say. I got so confused then because he was like, because he actually was like better than what I'd imagined.
And then you've done it another time with him.
Then, yeah, that was Christmas Eve last year. And we were just going down to get a few bits down in the Super Value or whatever, and Daniel sings Christmas carols every Christmas Eve and on low.
Yeah.
And we just happened to be going in, and they were finished, the Christmas carols, and he was just walking out. And I was like, oh, how are you getting on? And he was like, geez, that video went mad, didn't it? And I was like, and he goes, you know, we should do another one. And I was standing there like...
He asked you to do it?
I was standing there holding Gracie, yeah. And he's like, we should do another one, you know, kind of about that we never found that, never got that photo or something. And I was like, aye. And Aoife kind of was like looking at me going, he means now, like...
Right.
I thought he meant like just, we'll do one again. I thought he was leaving. No, where we do it? We do it over here. And I was like, this is class.
Unreal.
And we done it another one, just again, one take. Is that all right? Grand.
And that's become your thing now, hasn't it?
It kind of came.
That's your thing, where you walk up to people who are the people and you're looking for them.
So kind of, yeah. We tried, well, we've done a few of them, like, but we're trying to figure out how to, I don't know, with Ray Hunt now and Mickey Joe. Funny.
Do you get negative comments, or do you find social media hard at times? Like, your page is very safe. Like, I can't imagine you getting much shit or...
yeah, but or abuse. It looks safe, but there's so many perfect parents that can tell you what you're doing wrong. That's why you don't need to know what you're doing wrong.
Because really?
They will tell you if...
Like what?
Like, you shouldn't have your jacket on when they're in their car seat. Yes, I know. Like, if they have jackets on and they're in the car seat and they see that, or
if the child has their jacket on in the car seat, why? What's wrong with that?
It's like, if you know, big winter jackets, they kind of tell you to take them off when you're putting them into the car seat, but sometimes it's just like, we need to get to school, and give me a break,
doing
doing the best I can with the tools I have, and it's like, no matter what, if you give them grapes, they'll tell you. Like,
you haven't cut them in half.
Yeah. Or even that someone will say that you shouldn't even give them to them, even if they are cut in half. But 90% of it, 99% of it is 100%. It's great.
The grapes thing is serious though, isn't it?
It is. Like, if you give kids full grapes, like.
Yeah.
I did see one nutritionist, or I don't know, was it a nutritionist or parenting expert anyway, and they were like, you shouldn't give a child grapes until they can buy them themselves.
Really?
That's what they were saying, like, which is kind of, I thought... sure, 4 or 5's grand, but no, seems to be.
Wow.
But
yeah, so you get the experts. Like,
in fairness, that doesn't happen too often. Like, it's grand. It's like 99%, as I say, is great. And people being nice.
Have you found people more negative lately?
I had a real bad one with a trend that was going, and then... But it wasn't my followers, that kind of way. It was a... There was one where it was a trend was you go in and you say, oh, there's a fella, dad up the town, he wants to beat me up.
Oh, and, yeah.
And he's a wee girl. Would you come and help me?
Yeah.
And
you have to see the child's reaction. Yeah. So the child will either agree to come and beat up the other child or not.
And like Gracie, straight away was like, oh, you could tell she knew this is not...
This isn't normal.
This isn't dad.
Like, dad's not going fighting another dad up the town.
Dad's never fought. Dad can't even win a fight against mommy, so he's not going to go fight. And everybody on my feed was like, this is hilarious, very funny. Because at the very end, you see me and Gracie going, I'm only joking, and she's fine about like 100%. Never mention it again. It's grand.
Yeah.
It was literally that 30 seconds. And Today FM wanted to share it, so they shared it. And their Facebook just went nuts.
Did it?
On
what, that you were a bad dad teaching your daughter?
A terrible parent and terrible this and terrible that. And you're just everything was slating. First of all, they were kind of slating Today FM about sharing it. And then they were slating me. And then I just says, I'm not going to read the comments. Stop reading the comments. I was out the next day doing work, the next morning doing drone work or whatever. And I got a phone call from Aoife going, can you tell them to take that video down? Because I can't read this anymore. And it started, like, and when I went into it then, they were slating me, they were slating Aoife, they were slating people that just...
Personally, like?
Like, it got, well, not saying, but like, these parents need to be...
Yeah.
And Aoife was just like, I can't, and I messaged the girl in Roisin, I think her name was, and she was like, oh, I'm, and she was so apologetic then. She was like, we just thought it was hilarious. And
yeah,
it was, do you know, you can tell that it's like,
You can tell there's no harm in it.
Yeah, and you can tell that she's not like going, yeah, come on, let's go box. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. You know, there was never, but.
Out of that trend, it was probably the safest one they could ever find.
Yeah. And then it was the, like.
Because there are young kids, there's videos in that trend and they're 4 or 5 and they're heading off up the town ready to kill someone.
Yeah. And like, it's the, obviously, but it's funny because a few of my followers, they were going, I'm going to read them comments and my neighbours in their comment and her and her daughter had a blazing row out the window of the front of the house and the guards had to be called. And I was like, there you go. Like,
but it's always the ones.
But you're going like, she said the guards had to be called to this person's house and her on comment and tell me I'm a terrible parent. And you're going,
do you find it hard to deal with? Like, was that a difficult time for you?
That was horrible. That was really horrible. I contemplated not doing anything again. Like, you actually, thank you for a lot of stuff because I should be thanking you all the time. But like, cause I text you about it and you were just like, they'll be on to the next video. They'll be slating the next person. 15 minutes, you're not even on their radar. And that's exactly it. Like, they go to the next video and they're slating the next person and they don't. It's crazy. Like, that people are that bitter or, I don't know, have that much hate in them that they just scroll from one video to the next and leave. Yeah. If I see a video there that I don't like or something, I go,
scroll on. Yeah.
I've never felt the need to go, oh, you're a terrible person. I don't know why that hates and people are I don't see why you can't just scroll on.
Yeah, it's an issue with them. Like, it's nothing you've done and it's nothing you can do. It's obviously something within them. But I do see online, and I see it on my own page a lot lately, people are getting a lot nastier and a lot more negative and very quick to jump down your throat. And, you know, social media isn't a nice place anymore. And I'm always the first to stick up for it. And I'm always the first to stick up for it and say, you know, it has these positives, like we can raise €10,000 in 24 hours and all these fantastic things we've done. But the second you have any opinion or any view on anything that's left of centre, oh my God, I have a ticket for your show and I'm going selling it and I'd never come to see you again after you saying, like, I did a thing the last night saying about the hospital being overcrowded and this woman jumped down my throat telling me to do my research. The research was, I was in the fucking corridor for 4 days with my mother.
Yeah.
That's the research. I don't need you jumping down my throat telling me that the hospital isn't in a heap. Do you know what I mean?
And they probably haven't been in the hospital themselves. And
that's without speaking to a nurse or a doctor or a nurse. The nurse that moved us from the back door. So I tell this story quite a lot. I told it on Ireland AM. My mum was inside the back door for two nights and we moved from the back door halfway up the corridor. The nurse who did that told me that they're finished there that week. They said they can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And they were moving into a different job. And people are just, you know, people just jump down your throat so quickly.
Mm. That's it. Unless you're actually in there to see what's happening, like, it's...
Yeah. It's awful, you know, and I'm not making it about me, like, you know...
No, but it's
my poor mother didn't want to go in there. I forced her to go in. I called the ambulance, forced her to go in, because, you know, mums, like, their arm could be falling off and they're like, no, I'll just put a bandage on it.
That'd be grand.
I'll walk around the house for 2 or 3 days And she was putting it off and putting it off and I forced her to go in. And then for the 2 or 3 days we're in there, you're convincing her to stay there where she's ready to walk out the back door. And that's a lot to deal with as a son that just wants the best for your mum. And you're already feeling so guilty that they're in there. You're forcing them to stay there.
In a corridor, basically.
Yeah. And the poor thing didn't know where she was for the first day or two. She thought... Anyway, I don't want to go into details because she's not here to defend herself and I don't want to be talking behind her back, but it was a very, very difficult time and I never want to experience it again and I don't want other people to experience it.
No, it's...
And it's awful in this day and age that happens.
Until Letterkenny's having the similar problems with overcrowding as well at the minute and I went in... Kate had a temperature and it just was staying. It was like way over 40. And then they said, take her to A&E. And we went to A&E and it was bananas. And I met another girl from the town she was 8 months pregnant anyway. And she had been there from 12. I was there at 4. And I left there at 10 o'clock that night. And she was still sitting there.
Yeah.
And her nearly due. And I was like, how is she not up in the ward at this stage? Like, she was still sitting in A&E.
Yeah. It's awful. And the poor staff, and I can't understand how the staff are always so amazing.
It's unreal.
They can't do enough for you. And the pressure they're under. And if I was under a tenth of that pressure, I'd tell you to fuck off.
It's mental.
I'd be like, will you get away from me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it a pity that you're constantly nervous of that, like you're putting Gracie into the car and you're putting the seatbelt on, you're going 2 minutes down the road to the school. And in the back of your mind, the whole time, you're like, oh. And then you're not your authentic self because you're afraid to put up content.
That's it. Yeah,
and you're afraid to share content. Like,
I gave this example there last week as well. I was in Dublin at a thing, and like people say, oh, you're always on your phone. You should get your phone down. You know, like, in a way, people would say that to you. I remember one day going down to the beach, and there's a couple there with their child, and they had a big DSLR proper camera with them. And our phones were in our pockets, if they're even in, they might have been in the car. And we walked away out the beach and we walked back, and that family were still there taking a full on photo shoot. And, and like, if we took one photo, we might have took a photo, you know, and yeah. It would be like, that's all it is, that 1 second. I think people think because you're on social media that you're just automatically videoing everything 24/7, whereas you're taking snapshots and putting it up. You're not curating, you're not taking loads of takes, or you're not, it's not like the kids are fucking, hold on, do that again. Like, it's it's literally that snapshot of that 5 seconds, that 10 seconds, and the phone's down.
Yeah.
Whereas people think that, oh, you must be on it all the time, and you're not. It's not like that at all. Like, you know that yourself. You kind of.
On a positive note then, have you found it very supportive?
Great, yeah. Like, that's what I say. Like, 99% of the people are amazing.
Yeah.
They're so nice. Like, people are lovely. Like, and they'll give you a comment, maybe saying, geez, you're doing fair play to you. This is, well done on that, or whatever. Simple things. Like, it might be just like, oh, the girls are lovely, well done, good stuff, or you have them in matching dresses, well done, you got them out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way.
They're all still alive.
Yeah.
Well done.
Whereas I wouldn't be on there if it was,
yeah.
Do you know, if I was getting slated all the time, I'd be off in a heartbeat. Like, it wouldn't. But no, it's great. Like, and it is, and you meet lovely people, like friggin' so, like you.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, you've meet so many nice, like great. Like,
you can make great connections and great friends.
Where when you're over 30 or over even 25, I'd say it's harder to make friends. Like, it is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I made 5 friends, 6 friends. That's it. Do you know? You don't have. Whereas you find other people that have similar interests and similar things like that there. And it's kind of.
It's nice to have that support within the industry as well, because there are kind of content creators who are just absolutely mad to have as many followers as possible and be as famous as possible, and they don't care who they hurt or what they do or how they get it. And then there are other people then who just want to use it as a bit of a hobby and are tipping along.
Like, somebody asked me the last day, what are you doing with it? What do you plan to do with it? And I was like, I have as little a plan now as I did when I accidentally started growing a following. Like, it's.
Do you want to hear a good one? I'm always like, I always try to defend it. And there was this fella on TikTok. I don't know if you've seen him. And he said, I'm a content creator and I have an agent now, and I'm tearing down the curtain on what it's like to be a content creator with an agent. And he has 8,000 followers on TikTok and 19,000 on Instagram. So he goes, there's this, like, you know, people are wondering how much you should charge if you're on social media, and you know, people are undervaluing themselves and they don't know how much to charge. Well, I'm telling you now that you should be charging €500 for every 3,000 followers you have. That's what he said, right? €500 for every 3,000 followers you have. And that's for a grid post, right? And then I just comment underneath going, don't know what curtain you're taking down, but this post is as far out as a lighthouse.
Yeah.
And it's actually doing more damage to the industry than anything.
People then are saying, oh, well, they're...
Because then they're saying, right, Donegal Daddy has 43,000 followers, right, divided by 3,000. So that's 14 multiplied by 500. So you should be getting $7,000 for every post.
Jesus, I start calling in them $7,000.
$7,000 for every post you're doing. And you might go and spend a whole day doing a video shoot for somebody. And if you got €700, you would be doing awful well.
You would be very...
You'd be ecstatic. It'd be like winning the lotto.
But
so you have this flute on TikTok telling people now that Donegal Daddy is getting $7,000 for every post he puts up. And then you have people going, oh, sure, it's flying it. You're flying it, aren't you?
Like, it's like that. There,
you're a millionaire.
I was laughing. I put it up my story because I was in mum's Auris. She needed a jump start here one day and I jump started her and she headed away. And then next thing she ran, oh, bloody, and Ardran broke down. So I went over to jump start her again and the old high ace.
Yeah.
And then I met some boy. And then as we were leaving, she had a puncture on the car. And then I was like, right, and get the puncture fixed. And this boy goes, geez, you're doing good now, TikTok. You're fairly flying, and aren't you? You're going well. And I was like, I'm going well. I'm jump starting cars. And yeah, it's going unbelievable.
I'm just trying to work out here how much I should be getting per post. 21,000.
Call it in.
21,000.
Go back, get them invoices out.
I haven't made 21,000 in the last 2 years from my Instagram page.
I seen another post about that, about some, it was a girl saying the price of, and I was like, no, there's no way in hell. It was her, she was going on the engagement and it was $1,500 if your engagement is kind of over 3% or something. And I was going,
yeah.
And my engagement was...
But see,
was
this, like, is another thing that people don't realise. You can have 1 million followers and have no engagement.
Yeah.
And that's true. And you can have 5,000 followers and your engagement be through the roof.
Yeah.
And the micro-influencers are very, very valuable. The people with 10, 20, 30,000, 40,000 followers are really valuable.
I met a girl that was like, she has, I don't know what, 250,000 at a wedding. And my sister-in-law was like, oh, you got a photo with her. Oh, you bet you're getting loads of follows. And I was like, 3 follows since I put up that. And I don't think they came from that photo. Like,
yeah.
But it's funny. Like, it's like you said, it's...
There is a perception out there that...
That you're just a matter of, that's going to be...
Yeah.
Because she shared the photo on her page and you're like, no, that's not...
Yeah.
It's funny.
It's an interesting industry and it's going from strength to strength, but there is a lot of... I suppose uncertainty about it and assumptions about it. People put two and two together and assume everyone is doing the same. Like, I see Eric this week. You know, Eric was on Squid Game. Eric Roberts, he's a friend of ours, and he was on the Squid Game on Netflix, and he's doing really well. Like, it has to be said, he's probably one of the most. He's definitely
one of the top in Ireland, one of the most thriving
content creators in Ireland. But he's worked hard. He's put up a video every day and he's always stayed positive and he's stayed out of trouble. And he's, you know, he's just a really nice fella. But then you see today, like, he's just driven around from studio to studio to studio to studio today.
Yeah.
And that's all cost money. And no one's paying him to go from 98 FM to Ireland AM to the 6 o'clock show to the... And, you know, and like, then feed yourself.
It's all like this exposure. It's like, oh yeah, exposure. It's going to... Like, exposure's not going to put petrol in the tank. Like,
somebody rang me today actually about a gig and they said, you know, it'd be really good exposure for you. And once upon a time I took all the gigs for exposure, but then I just said today, I can't cash that in.
That was the big one when we started the band. Like, that was the one. I was like, oh, you come play with us, everyone will have you in playing. And you're like,
yeah,
oh yeah, let's go. And you used to run around doing everything
We're very, and I've said this on a few podcasts, we're very slow to value ourselves, aren't we?
But it's funny, last year we got
as I'm giving out about a fella here that has valued himself at 19 grand per post, but go on.
You do get still the odd time, and this couple were like, we want to give you the chance to play at our wedding.
Wow, thanks a million.
I was like, whoa.
Unreal.
We want a young band, up and coming band, and... Kevin, our youngest cousin that's in the band, he sent it to a friend of his and he's like, he's the oldest band I know. I was like, thanks very much. But yeah, so it was funny. Like, it was just the way they put it. Like, I was like, yeah, no, thankfully we're playing, but you're okay.
Yeah. Before we finish up, have you any questions for me? Anything you want to ask me?
How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah.
You're flat out and
I'm flat out.
Take a holiday. I know you're in Donegal for a holiday, but...
Yeah, I know I will. I'll take a holiday in January. I will.
What's next for Alan Clark?
What's next? The show now on the 23rd of December. I'll get that out of the way and then I'll take a holiday. Yeah.
More shows next year? Or
I'm going to scale them down. I want to scale them down next year. The big the big, big shows are a bit too much pressure for me, and
it's a lot of moving.
I do everything myself. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. I do everything myself, and people say, you know, you need somebody, you need help, but it's very hard to find that person. It's very hard to find that person that gets it and can do it. And that's with no disrespect to anyone.
That's the industry. Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm like. It's like
there are people who, yeah, will come in and say, oh, I'll help you, because they see the dollar signs. But they're not doing it for the love of the show or the love. I just want everything to go really well. And the last thing I think about is money.
But I think you're very like me. It's like, you know exactly what you want it to be like. So it's very hard to get somebody else. And it's very hard to make somebody see what you want it to be.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe that's...
Like, for instance, there was one theatre that, like, you know, somebody said it to me. I think it was David Cuddy that said to me, he came along to Cork and he just couldn't understand how the whole thing was ran by one person, and the one person that was running it was on the stage.
Yeah.
And I find it quite easy, because I come from a marketing background, an entertainment background, a DJ background. I haven't done much MCing, but I've ran shows and I've put shows together. So I find it all very easy. The hardest thing I find is the actual MCing and being the front man and being the face of it.
Yeah.
But I went into a theatre once, and we went in, the meeting was on the Monday, the show was on at the weekend or whatever. And I said to the sound guy, do you need a person backstage as a runner to make sure everyone is wearing the right mic at the right time and they're to communicate to you? And he goes, no, I don't. That's grand. I have all that sorted. And on the night at 7:55, he came up to me and he asked me, have you anyone that would do that job? And it's 7:55 and you're in the zone and you're trying to think, right, this is what I'm going to say and this is how I'm going to run the first 20 minutes of the show. And really what you want to say is, I fucking asked you on Monday, do you need that person? And here you are at 7:55 asking me, do I have anyone available? And it just so happened that we did have somebody available, but he was to do another job. So I took him out of that job and put him into this job. But that's somebody that's his job. And he wasn't even able to do it.
Yeah. And you're kind of,
you're trying to say, how would you find somebody to run a show in the west of Ireland like that, that would run it for the love of it as much as you love it?
Yeah.
It's difficult to find those people.
It is. And it's like, when it's something,
a lot of people think they can do it.
Yeah. And then that's it. It's kind of just getting someone that's going to be.
Yeah.
You nearly need someone that has done that, even like put on musicals or something to that effect, that has knows it.
Yeah.
What and needs to be where at certain times.
Like. And even in that situation, I have to stay nice.
Mm.
And I have to stay, you know, we'll find somebody and we'll get them and we'll put them in. And really you're like, hang on now a second, this is your job. You fucked up.
Yeah. And the problem is too, then, as well, if you weren't on social media, it'd be grand, you could. But if the minute you say one crossword,
oh, he's a bollocks.
And then it'll be on, there'll be somebody,
he's awful difficult to work with.
Yeah. And it's nothing to do with the fact that they weren't.
Yeah. He's a nightmare to deal with. He was such a diva. Shouting and roaring backstage.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
There was another theatre where we were told at 10:45, a guy come up to me at 10:45. Now, we were dealing with this theatre for weeks in advance and organising everything. And at 10:45, this fella just walks out of nowhere and he goes, will you be finished at 11? And I look at my watch and I look at the running order and I say, no, I said, it'll be about 10:15. No, you have to be finished by 11. And this is 10:45. And I said, why do we have to be finished by 11? There's a fine if you go up past 11. And I said, a fine?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, yeah, there's an extra charge because all the staff have to go on to overtime. And at 10:45.
They told you that.
You have 500 people out there and you're here worrying about the next segment of the show. And you're told you have 15 minutes to do half an hour. And no one sees that. So it's not easy.
No, Jesus.
Micheál, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your hospitality here in Glenties.
Thanks for having me.
You brought me down to the, what's the name of that hotel?
The Highlands.
The Highlands Hotel. We had a beautiful meal. You wouldn't let me pay for it.
No. You got me last time, so.
What?
You got me last time, so I owe you. I probably owe you about 10 dinners at this stage.
We had a Mrs. Doyle moment in the Highlands. No. Two of us rolling around the restaurant. But I appreciate your time and I appreciate your friendship because it's hard to find good friends these days and you're one of my best friends.
Thanks very much.
And I appreciate
you. Likewise.
And I also appreciate Aoife for everything she has done and keeping you in this world because it certainly wouldn't be the same world without you.
Thanks very much, buddy.
Keep her lit.
Cheers.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by B.O.R.B. Homes. B.O.R.B. Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.